Springfield's Talk 104.1. I'm Nick Reed. It is Author of the Week time, thanks to our good friends at ABC Books on North Glenstone. Of course, at ksgf.com, we have our podcast section. It's our digital Author of the Week. Great resource for you as you try to figure out what that next book is that you want to read. Or if you stop by ABC Books on North Glenstone, just south of Kearney, when you walk in, right there is an Author of the Week section where you can find the books of the authors with which we speak on a weekly basis. And this week we have Thomas De Lorenzo. The book is The Politically Incorrect Guide to Economics. And boy, with the recent signing of the Inflation Reduction Act, what a perfect time to have you on. And I want to thank you for being with us. And let's actually, before we get to the broad subject of economics here, how appropriately named or accurately named in your assessment is this Inflation Reduction Act that has been signed by the Democrats?
It's totally upside down because it'll increase inflation. It's a massive increase in government spending, which will be monetized by the Federal Reserve, the central bank, and which means they'll expand the money supply to pay for a lot of this. And that'll increase demand in the economy, which pushes prices up. And at the same time, they tax production, especially energy production. And that'll make costs go up as well because you increase demand and you decrease supply in the economy. Both of those things push prices up, not down. So just on the face of it, what they're doing is increasing inflation, and they're calling it the Inflation Reduction Act. It's arguably the biggest lie that I've about economics that I've ever heard in my life.
It seems as if the two forms of economics that get talked about, discussed, debated, or thrown around, the terminology anyway, so much is capitalism and socialism. Of course, we're familiar. We hear terms like communism. But socialism has its defenders, its promoters. There are some elected Democrats who have no problem labeling themselves as socialists. And then, of course, there are those that believe in capitalism itself. Yet it seems to me as if oftentimes these are pretty misunderstood terms by both the supporters oftentimes and maybe even those in opposition to them. Each of them, if you would, how is it that you would most simply describe capitalism and most simply describe what it is that is socialism?
Yeah, well, capitalism is simply buying and selling in voluntary exchange on free markets, meaning we have economic freedom to buy and sell with whomever we want to do business with. And that's what capitalism is. Adam Smith, the author of the famous book, The Wealth of Nations, published in 1776, the year of the Declaration of Independence, he said it this way. He said, give me that which I want, and I will give you that which you want. And I used to tell my college students that the economic show Shark Tank is a perfect example of capitalism, so-called, where you have people, ordinary men and women who come up with an idea or a product or service that they think will help their fellow man out just a little bit, or hopefully a lot, and in return, their fellow man will pay for it. And so both sides benefits, mutually advantageous. That's capitalism. Now, what capitalism is not is crony capitalism. Mm. When the Congress voted to give the Silicon Valley millionaires and billionaires $250 billion a couple of weeks ago, that was an atrocity. That was just plundering the taxpayers and the working class for the benefit of the politically connected. That's not capitalism. That's what we call crony capitalism today, or corporate welfare. And socialism is government ownership or control of production. And, the whole history of socialism has been that it's economic poison because a socialist economy simply cannot work as an economy. But one thing it does succeed at is wildly enriching the people who run socialism. In Venezuela, for example, which went full-blown socialist about 15 or so years ago, destroyed their economy. People who used to have high-paying jobs are now shooting zoo animals and rooting through garbage for food. And I read in the Wall Street Journal that the daughter, the 35-year-old daughter of Hugo Chavez, former socialist dictator who fled the country, is worth $4 billion with a B. and the former finance minister is worth $11 billion, according to the Wall Street Journal. And so socialism is a system of plunder and control for the elite at the top live very well, and everybody else is impoverished. What most people are taught in school about socialism, though, is some sort of utopian dream world. And my students, I was an economics professor for 41 years, they were rarely taught the reality about socialism until they got to my class.
We're talking with our author of the week, Thomas DeLorenzo. The book is The Politically Incorrect Guide to Economics. And perhaps I'm a little bit biased because of what I see as the outcomes of these different approaches. But it seems to me as if people in America in particular who promote socialism really don't even know what it is. I see people oftentimes who knock capitalists as saying, oh yeah, they say against they're against socialism. Well, that would mean no fire departments, no military, no roads. And then whenever you point to examples of actual socialism, Venezuela, former Soviet Union, they say, well, no, that's not the type of socialism that we support. We support examples like we see in European countries. And to me, all signs point to seemingly they don't even know what socialism is. Do you find that to be the case?
Well, a lot of the younger people, you know, teenagers and college students think it means free stuff. You know, they listen to Bernie Sanders offering free health care, free housing, free tuition, and they seem to think, well, that'd be kind of nice. I can live like a teenager until I'm 40. If we do this. So you've got that group. And then you have other people. Even in the Scandinavian countries, by the way, are capitalists. They have private enterprise. Mm. They don't have government-run enterprises in Sweden. In fact, the head of the government of Sweden has objected very strongly to all these American politicians calling his country socialist. It's a private enterprise economy with a very large welfare state, just like the United States. We still have private enterprise here, but we do have a very large welfare state, just like Sweden. In fact, it's much bigger than Sweden, since we have a much bigger country than Sweden. And so, yeah, you're right. People just don't know about that, which is why I wrote another book, The Problem with Socialism. Mm. In my earlier Regnery Publishing book went by that title and took on that in particular. And I have one chapter on the current book, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Economics, on socialism and explaining just why it is it always inevitably fails. But yeah, people, a lot of people don't know really what it is.
Yeah, and I believe we actually have had you on as an Author of the Week guest highlighting that book, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Socialism. Now, when it comes to capitalism, one of the arguments that the average person might hear, you know, they know instinctually capitalism is good. It means liberty. It means freedom. They know that things are good. But then somebody will come along and they will, you know, say things like, you know, 1% of the population controls 78% of the wealth, and that is awful and horrible. And we have this income gap, and they're not paying their fair share, and we need to do things to make more fair. And oftentimes, for people that instinctually understand the benefits of capitalism, they don't know how to respond to that. What do you say to that sort of description?
Well, the only way to have perfect equality is a totalitarian society. So if you want a totalitarian society that will rob from the productive to give to the unproductive or the less productive, you need totalitarianism. That's one thing. And another thing about that is, if you just look up who pays income taxes on the National Taxpayer Union's website, you'll find that the top 55% of income earners pay about 97% of all income taxes. And so we already have an extraordinarily progressive income tax system. As far as that's concerned, it's hard to imagine it could be more progressive as far as that goes. And then a third way that I would answer that is that these statistics, it's easy to lie with statistics like this, because for example, the Dallas Federal Reserve did a study years ago where they actually tracked several thousand people who came to this country and who were, a lot of them came to this country and started out at the bottom of the ladder, the economic ladder, and looked at how they did. And they found out that very, very few of them ended up 20 years later at the bottom of the ladder. There was a percentage, like 15% were the highest income earner class. And then, like something like 40 or 50% are in the second highest income earner class. So yes, at any one point, there's always somebody at the bottom. And as we see all these new immigrants coming here now, today, well, they're going to be the new ones at the bottom. But as long as we have economic freedom, only a very small percentage of them will remain at the bottom of the income ladder. And historically, the economic opportunity we have is the greatest equalizer in the world. Capitalism is the greatest economic equalizer there is, much better than the welfare state, or certainly better than socialism. Socialism makes everybody equally poor. And so it's economic opportunity that reduces inequality, and the more the better.
Our author of the week, Thomas DeLorenzo, the book, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Economics. I saw this article earlier this morning, and from a political perspective, I think it was trying desperately to grasp at any sort of hope for the Democrat chances in November, and saying, with all of the legislation, this big, bold legislation that Biden has passed, perhaps the historic race will be more like a midterm of FDR, and FDR was very unpopular, and then he comes up with all these bold pieces of legislation that turn things around because America started doing so much better. And there is this, it's even, you get this sense in school that, you had Herbert Hoover and the Depression, and then Roosevelt comes along and the Great New Deal. And I remember learning all the alphabet agencies, and all of these things were attributed to bringing the country out of a Great Depression and putting us back on the track to economic prosperity. What's the truth there?
It's all a big lie. When the unemployment rate in America in 1929, on the eve of the Great Depression, was 2.9%, according to the U.S. Department of Labor. By 1939, the end of the decade, after the whole New Deal, and the Roosevelt's New Deal had been put into place, the unemployment rate was still 17.2%. It was still almost five times higher than the normal rate before the Great Depression. In fact, the fact is that Roosevelt's New Deal made the Great Depression deeper and longer lasting. And the first New Deal, for example, was based on the harebrained idea that low prices caused the Great Depression. Therefore, if the government can force up prices, make everything more expensive, it will end the Great Depression. So they put thousands of price codes in place telling businesses you need to raise your prices. And they hired thousands of price code police to go around the country to police price codes. There's even a story of one man, a tailor in New Jersey, who went to jail for cutting the price for hemming a pair of men's pants and things like that. And that was all ruled unconstitutional in 1935, thank goodness. But it did a lot of damage. You raise prices, it made people poorer. And then they had massive tax increases that made people even poorer yet, to pay for all these government public works programs, but they ended up destroying more jobs by taking taxes out of the people's bank accounts than they created with all the government jobs, because all the bureaucracy and red tape, for every $10,000 a year job, they might have spent $40,000 or $50,000 in bureaucracy. And so they actually shrunk the economy during the Great Depression, which is why the unemployment rate was still five times higher in 1939 to 1929. And so Americans are taught a myth about Roosevelt. And that's one of the reasons I wrote this book, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Economics, to help people be your own economist. Educate yourself, and you won't be bamboozled by people like the one that wrote this article that you read this morning. Yeah.
Well, this leads to, I think right now, my final question. I mean, you've got a PhD in economics, former professor of economics. So you're somebody that's so well versed in this stuff, and I believe in the liberty component of this and capitalism for a couple of reasons. I'm just a philosophical believer in the benefits of liberty and freedom. But at the same time, without even knowing anywhere near the depth that you do of economics, I'm just big into what works. And for me, it is, I want to bash my head against the wall in frustration sometimes, because the things that some of these elected officials propose, they've been done, and consistently they fail. And when they're done, the people suffer. And there's never been an instance in which the things they promise have resulted from the things that they propose. And so I can only imagine, is it not the most frustrating thing in the world for somebody like you to listen to these people who run for office and to see people cheer them on as they make claims that are so patently untrue?
And, you know, Thomas Sowell wrote a whole book about that. It's called The Vision of the Anointed, about how, you know, decades of research and history and evidence show that these policy after policy fails, and then they keep doing it. They're doing the same thing. And I think one reason for it is, and one of the things I write about in my book, is that the incentive system in government is such that failure is success. The worse the government does at educating the kids in school, the more money we give the public schools. Mm-hmm. The worse job they do in reducing poverty, the more money we give the poverty agencies, and on and on and on. So there's a financial incentive in government that you're rewarded for failure. And so, you know, anything you reward, you're going to get more of. So it's built into the system. And, of course, the politicians don't see it as a failure. They see it as a bigger budget, a bigger staff, more perquisites that they can buy for themselves with that bigger budget, more pay raises and bonuses and things like that. So it's all good for them. But not for us. And we do make progress here and there, but it's a constant battle. It's sort of an eternal vigilance is the price of liberty, is the old saying. And that's why I've been doing what I've been doing for several decades, writing books like this and teaching and hopefully making a little bit of a difference.
Well, I know that folks like you do. I appreciate you being with us this morning and writing the book, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Economics, our author of the week, Thomas DeLorenzo, on Springfield's Talk 104.1. I'm Nick Reed.